Well, hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Australian Politics Live. I'm Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and I'm also the host of this show. But before I get into my own conversation this week, I just want to alert you to a new podcast that we've started. It's called Witch Hunt, and it looks back at Me Too, and it asks, well, a challenging question really, has anything changed? This is a huge project. It's involved a number of us and we've been working on it all year. And I've got a little preview here that my producer Miles will play for you now.
When it happens to you, you feel so shocked and so invaded that you don't respond necessarily in the way you normally would, right? I can remember it happened to me at a dinner one night, the hand on the leg thing, and the person's mother was sitting at the table.
Since I sent out the tweet, I've been overwhelmed with about 1,600 stories. What I have discovered is that it's incredibly difficult to tell those stories in Australia.
When I first came into this industry 45 years ago, I was told that the only reason men hit their wives is because they're not very good lovers, mothers, cleaners, cooks, and if they picked up their game, then he wouldn't have to hit them. So we can and do change the way we think and the way we do things.
I assure you that this is absolutely coincidental, but my own conversation this week is right in that pocket. My guest is the Greens Senator Sarah Hanson-Young.
Change doesn't happen because everybody knew all the time and just didn't want to say it. Right? Change happens because people change their minds and their hearts and become, you know, more enlightened.
And over the next little bit, we're going to talk about what it's like to be a woman in politics in 2018. Please do listen. Sarah Hanson-Young, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, let's just start with the obvious, right?
Which part? That I'm a woman?
No, love, I was going to start with a big year. Yeah. That it's been a big year.
It's been a very big year.
For the awakening of women generally.
Yes.
But the bolshiness of women in politics specifically. Mm. So why?
Look, I think a few things have happened. Firstly, I guess there's the Me Too movement had kind of created obviously a bit more of a spotlight on the way women are treated, particularly when they're at work, when they're doing their job, whatever job that might be. And of course, once the, you know, show business kind of blew up and the lid blew off that, and then kind of the finance sector and the elephant in the room, I guess, is politics. When you talk about the ultimate kind of power play, and this place in particular has lots of stories that are very public and lots of stories that aren't. And I think what we see publicly is at the same time as the community wanting to really know what life is like for women in politics, they're also increasingly disgusted at just the general way politics looks at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of culture. And I think, you know, I've been here for 10 years now, and over that time, the decorum in the place has gotten worse. And women cop the brunt of that. And, you know, critics will go out, will come back at me at that and say, well, why? You're just, you know, playing the gender card. No, it's because the types of kind of robust debate that is continually used in this place, the line is more often crossed with women when the attacks and the insults become very personal and very gendered.
Do you think that people who do engage in that sort of conduct know what they're doing, or are blind to it in a way, that it's sort of like, because, you know, it's a very masculine environment, the one you and I both work in,
it is.
That's the default, and power plays are the default, right? Do you think that they're blind to their own words, barbs, conduct having a gender dimension, or do you think it's deliberate?
I actually think it's both. I think there are some men in particular who are a bit blind to it, and they, as the kind of temper rises, haven't realised exactly the nature of the comments and the conduct and the behaviour, and the extra intimidating aspect of perhaps, you know, during question time, a female colleague being yelled and shouted at by a very aggressive man, and it might be over policy, and not understanding that. But then there are people who deliberately and very specifically know that those calculated shots across the bow in relation to sexist put-downs, innuendo, slurs, really sexualised bullying. No, those blokes know exactly what they're doing. They may not expect to be called out for it because perhaps they've, you know, behaved like that forever and they've seen other men behave like that, but they know what they're doing. Those types of put-downs are words that are weapons. They are bullets that shoot across the chamber. They're designed to throw you off your game, either make you shut up and sit down, or react in such a way where you seem over the top and hysterical, and therefore they can say, "Oh, you can't handle it.
You can't cut it in the environment.
You can't cut it in this environment." And look, you know, I've always given as good as I get. I mean, I love a good, you know, debate in that chamber. I'm passionate. I've never shied away from that. I think robust debate is actually really important because that's where you sometimes get to the truth, is when people actually are pushed to justify their position or justify why they've just backed somebody else in. But there is a line, and that line is when it becomes personal, sexualized, gendered. If you can't debate me on my policy, then you're the one who can't handle the heat and should get out of the kitchen, not me.
Sure. Why was this year a tipping point for you?
A number of reasons. I mean, there has been an increase in the level of this type of commentary and debate in the chamber. Or should I say, disintegrating level. And that, I think, has come from a number of key members in the chamber, and I named them in the chamber this week. They all sit together. It's a bit of a pack mentality, and they egg each other on. And I've sat there for a good 12 months now and seen it get worse and worse. And more and more personalised, more and more direct. There used to be things that people would whisper as they walked past me in the chamber, designed to kind of, you know, shut down my confidence.
Yeah, get under your skin.
Get under my skin.
Get in your
throw
head.
Me off. Get in my head. They're now just shouted across the chamber. And
why,
they egg each
why,
other on.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that is?
I think some people in this place still don't respect the idea that women can have strong opinions, and they haven't caught up with modern Australia. And our parliament is so out of step with what is acceptable in other workplaces around the country. And don't get me wrong, I know there are women in a variety of different professions who still deal with this stuff every day. And I know because as I've kind of garnered enough courage to speak out about it for myself, I've been inundated with letters and emails and phone calls from women right across the country who've said, "God, this just happened to me the other day," and written me their story. Or a story from, you know, 10 years ago that still obviously weighs on their mind. I've had contact from men who have said, "I saw this happen to a woman at work the other day and I didn't know what to do. I felt like, oh, it wasn't right. It made me feel uncomfortable. But if I call it out, is that going to make it worse for her?" And so there is this, the nature of the way men and women deal with this kind of undermining, bullying tactic in the workplace has meant that both sides have had to stay silent. And me being able to speak up about it and other people has meant, well, actually they can talk and maybe we can do something about it.
And what do you think about the Liberal women who have been really quite interesting this year?
Oh, I found this fascinating. And you know, all strength to their arm, actually. I must say, I don't think any party should be pretending that, you know, that every woman in their party is looked after properly or respected or hasn't had a moment of feeling undermined. Like, no one has a monopoly on respect. But what we do know is that in the Liberal Party in particular, Liberal women are starting to speak up and stand up for themselves. And rather than having a kind of a way of dealing with that and men coming forward and supporting them, they've had no other choice but to support each other. And I think in a way that's a really good sign, but it'd be good to see some Liberal men actually backing their Liberal women too.
Absolutely. Do you think there's any appetite and, you know, one of the other, you talk about the sort of rising incivility in the place, which is sort of connected to, you know, increasing tribalism, increasing polarisation. That's part of it.
That's right.
But do you think that there would be any appetite for a women's caucus?
I think we need one. And those conversations have started to happen. Finally, I've been in here for 10 years and I can't believe in that time we haven't had one.
So tell me about the conversations.
I've had a number of conversations. I've spoken with a number of the Liberal women who have been subjected to intimidation and bullying in their party. And for a variety of reasons, they haven't, you know, felt that they could take that next step. Obviously, Julia Banks has taken that ultimate step this week, and all strength to her arm. And we might not agree on, you know, some parts of policy, but boy, she nailed it when she said that, you know, the Liberal Party had kind of followed a particular far-right agenda at the cost of looking after their own broader base and the women who have been elected in the parliament. But then there's other women. I know Linda Reynolds obviously raised similar concerns in her party room, and I've reached out to her over the last couple of months. And I've also raised it with a number of women in Labor to say, you know, we can't just use this issue politically either. You know, I do get a little bit disappointed from time to time seeing when, you know, Labor members stand up in question time and berate the Liberal Party over their treatment of women and make it even harder for the women in the Liberal Party to stand up or to deal with it in a way that at least keeps them some respect and with some decorum. So it shouldn't be played with, and I think we have to actually put down our bows and arrows across political sides and say, no, women deserve a voice in this parliament from all parties, from all sides of politics. And actually, when we work together, we do a really good job. And I know this from experience on various Senate committees. When you've got a majority of women, we often come up with agreed reports. You know,
go figure.
Like, we're actually quite good negotiators because we have an ability to see and empathise another person's point of view. Now, I'm not saying men don't, but women have a particular ability to do that, and we're proud of it. And we engage in a way with each other that is different. And I think the only way we change this culture is by getting more women in politics, and they're not all going to come from one side. So we have to work together to make sure there's more women from all sides that are elected.
What about, do you think part of the problem is that it's the ultimate self-regulating culture of politics, that there is no external, you know, sort of finger waggler when things get out of hand?
There's no real accountability at the end of the day.
Well, not really.
Well, there isn't. And, I mean, I must say that's the thing that has shocked a lot of people in the cases that I've highlighted in my experience, David Lionholm case, this recent incident in the Senate with Barry O'Sullivan, and people saying, well, hang on, in my workplace, you'd be, you know, called into the boss's office, there's rules and regulations, and there's just no way this kind of behaviour could continue. Not to mention you could go to Fair Work if you were feeling, you know, harassed and being regularly bullied in your workplace. We got none of that. We're a law unto ourselves in this place.
Entirely.
And so it is that kind of self-regulating culture, which, as we know, when that happens, it's up to the mob mentality to deal with it. It takes a lot of skin to challenge that and take that on. Mm. I think we're at a point now where change has to happen. I do think we need some type of code of conduct, but it has to come with consequences. And one of the things that strikes me is, just take Senator Lionhelm. He has been censured by the Senate for what he said to me, and yet he gets to sit in the temporary deputy president's chair every week. I don't see how can those two things go together. One of the few people, one of the only members in 10 years that I've been here who is not a minister or a member of the government to be censured by the Senate, and he gets to sit in the chair every now and then. Gets extra money for that too. Right? So there's got to be some consequence. And if we think that this behaviour isn't appropriate, then people should be punished.
Mm. And what about your own party culture?
Yeah. Well, as I said before, I don't think any party has a monopoly on decency. And we shouldn't crow. No one on any side of politics should crow about their culture, because this is something that is society-wide. And is it really surprising that inside a political party or inside a parliament that we are grappling with how we find ways to treat women better, have protocols and procedures for reporting incidents where harassment has occurred? Of course not. Our job, and as a member of my party, and as a as an elected member, is to make sure we drive those processes and try and get them right. They'll never be perfect, but it's not the kind of thing that you set and forget. You actually have to be open to evolving when things need to evolve. And we've been doing that. But of course, admitting that is always hard.
Mm.
It's always hard. And hiding from it doesn't work. Confronting it head on and saying, yep, that process wasn't right, let's put something better in place, that's what we're working through. And, we shouldn't pretend we're not.
And you mentioned a bit before about you've had a lot of support from the community.
Mm.
What's the...
There's some assholes out there too, of course,
Yeah, well, but, yeah.
But decent people know bullying and intimidation and sexist put downs when they see it, men and women.
What about in Parliament, though? I'm not asking you to reveal confidences, but I'm interested in how your stand has been received, both by men and women across the parties.
So when I named and put on the record what had happened with David Lionhelm, I'm not sure people knew quite what to do with that, because that was the first time it had really been
blown up like that. Mm.
I did receive support from men and women in this place. Men were the first to reach out.
It's interesting.
A number of men were the first to reach out.
Mm-hmm.
And one bloke in particular, different side of politics, called me up and he said, Sarah, I know they've said stuff like this to you for a long time. I know this goes on. I don't really know what to do about it. I didn't want to draw attention because I didn't want to embarrass you, which is very similar to the stories that I've heard from other women and other men out there.
Mm.
And I've really reflected on that a lot. I think we have to find ways of empowering each other and empowering men to be able to call things out as well when they see it. And give a license for men to be able to recognise that perhaps something that they hadn't previously thought of before as being particularly undermining of a woman because of, her gender or how sexualised it was, that's okay.
Mm.
We're not, change doesn't happen because everybody knew all the time and just didn't want to say it. Right? Change happens because people change their minds and their hearts and become, you know, more enlightened. We've got to give a license for that. And it's got to be one that's not overly patronising in a way as well, or punishing, but actually supportive. So I've really reflected a lot on a number of conversations I've had with men in this place since then. This week, I think people are shocked that it is still going on.
Mm.
And I've been inundated today by people on all sides across both chambers today, which indicates to me that people are sick of it. Mm. And they're not just sick of it for seeing how I'm treated or other, you know, women might be treated. I think they're sick of it because they know the public hate it.
Mm.
And in the midst of all of this toxic kind of view and culture of the lack of civility in politics, it's not nice as a politician to have to go home after you've had a week in Canberra, go down to the local shops, engage with your local community, and have people just come up and go, God, politicians are arseholes. Like, what are you doing there? You act like children. It's in everyone's interest that we inject a bit more civility into this place.
I do love your license for enlightenment. I really do.
Yeah, well, I feel quite strongly about that, because otherwise things won't change, you know.
Yeah, and things have to change.
They have to. They absolutely have to. And, you know, some people are just going to be morons. Some people will never change. But most men are decent, and when they see women being treated badly, it makes them feel uncomfortable. Let's help them know what to do when that happens.
I think that's a lovely note to end on. Mm. Let's end it there, Sarah. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, as always, for joining us. I really do appreciate it. Thanks, as always, to my producer, to Miles Martignoni, and to Hannah, who assists also with production in Sydney. You know the drill. Remember to subscribe, to share, to let your friends know about the podcast. If you do like the listening, it really does help. Do leave us a rating and a review and all of that sort of get up. I've got a number of conversations already in train over the closing weeks of the political year in 2018. I'm really looking forward to a number of them coming up over the next few weeks. Until we're all together again, take care.